Well, I'm very lucky to have with me today an artist who I've seen live. I've listened to a lot of his albums, and this is one I have to say I'm a bit of a fan. So I'll try not to fan geek out too much. But on the phone today, he's got a new album out now. It's called Built by Angels. He's releasing his older album in the U.S. It's called It's Boring Being in Control. And of course, if you haven't figured it out yet, it's John Byrne, all the way from England. It's a long separation we've got. Good morning, John. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Thanks for talking with us. And we're really enjoying the new album you've got.
Thanks very much, yeah. Have you, that's Built by Angels?
Yeah.
Thanks very much, yeah. That's a new one.
So tell us. We want to talk about the new album. We'll talk about It's Boring Being in Control, because that's going to be a new release for a lot of people here in the United States as well. But let's talk about how you got started with this. On the website, you describe a pretty macabre occurrence that happened to you when you were young, and you sort of, at least on the website, you say that that was what contributed to you becoming a writer. But tell us about how you did get started writing.
Well, I think that was it, because when I was only about 5 or 6 or something like that, and my dad took me out for the day into the sort of town, you know, in the shops down there. And as we were walking up the one of the main streets, he was looking and he was doing a bit of window browsing, and I noticed there was an old bloke pushing a woman in a wheelchair. She was very old, you know what I mean? She looked kind of a bit worse for wear, you know what I mean? I presumed that she was asleep, and they had a bit of a closer inspection, but she had her shoes on the wrong feet, which I thought was a bit strange, and her makeup was kind of a bit smudged on her face and that. And I think she had a blouse on back in front of her. And I said to my dad, is that lady up there all right, Dad? And he went, no, she's dead. And then just carried on doing what he was doing, you know what I mean? And I took a bit of time, and I thought, well, that's it. He didn't seem to flinch there. But what I noticed was that there was this kind of blasé nature going on at the time in a town where people just accepted it. And the fact that this guy, obviously, is I think it was his mother that had died. I think he'd obviously been reliant on her all his life or whatever. And he just, with that happening, I think he just... Just carried on, you know what I mean? Carried on with his everyday sort of life and existence with, in his mind, I suppose, he might accept the fact that she's dead. So. I suppose that sort of stuff and that coming from that sort of town, you know, and then things going on, it shocked me enough to make me think a lot, you know. I think it made me sort of want to tell stories, and I suppose people are probably thinking, well, that's a bit bloody weird, isn't it? Because a bit morbid and that. But then I started watching things like Python and that, and I don't know, I just started getting really into a lot of like the darker side of human. And I started looking at people then, different types of people, darker people, you know what I mean? That have got a story, a certain story behind, a big story behind their lives, and I think sort of went from there with the storytelling, because that's what I did firstly. I just wrote a story, didn't really get into mood until later on.
Did you write a song from that when you were 5 or 6? Because there were some words on the site that you'd written about afterwards. Was that stuff that you wrote back then?
I think it was about 13 then, because I was still thinking about that.
Yeah,
you know, it's obviously something I think about every now and then still, and it's one of probably my earliest memories. I don't really have much of a good memory, but that's stuck in my mind. And so, yeah, I put it that I called it Voices, and it's sort of this guy who's obviously had a problem, you know, he's schizophrenic, so he's creating realities for himself around him, you know.
Yeah.
Put that into a song, yeah, and called it Voices, and that was something I was quite proud of. I actually think it's probably one of the best songs I've done. You know? I don't think what happened was there. I mean, my dad's he's an Irish writer, and he also plays the Irish pipes. So growing up with watching him play, and he used to play them like really nice airs, you know, really kind of melodic, beautiful pieces of music. You know, I fell in love with melody there, you know, and I just thought felt quite compelled to then put these stories together and somehow make them shine, you know, put them together with some music. And I think you can really bring a story to life when you put it into a song, I think it's...
Well, I suppose they can. Well, you do a very good job telling these stories and saying a lot more than the words are saying with the music, and I think that you've become a very good storyteller in that way.
Thanks very much. That's good to hear, because you know I don't hear that enough.
Wait, and you kind of want it, you also say on the website you think about wanting to be a filmmaker as well, and you can see that with the songs that you write, because they do. They always have a story, and they have a. It almost seems like each one of them is a little movie.
Yeah, I know, that's the idea. Yeah, because when I started, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to write plays or make films. But the town I was in, and you know, the money I had was never gonna. That was gonna be quite a big, you know, big challenge. So just putting them into songs was just a hell of a lot easier, and I think. Eventually, I would like to do that, because I think a lot of them, like you say, it could be a film in themselves. It's a script, you know. The song's very short, but the story's there, you know? And I think that'd be great. And also, I get quite bored of playing them over and over again. So I think if you make films, and it's once you've made it, you just put it out there,
mm-hmm.
and it does its own work, and you don't have to go out and act it everywhere. Yeah. So that would be a plus. Because I do get sick of singing. Some of them I don't. I've got my favourites, but some of them become a bit mature. Because it's almost like you've told that story. I've said that, I've got that off my chest. So I have to keep, keep playing it year in, year out. You know? And I suppose that's quite a good thing about being a filmmaker, really, isn't it? Because once it's out there, it's out there. You don't need to revisit it, really.
I think a filmmaker, and you probably feel like this way about your songs as well, is that they're never really finished. It seems that you can always go back to it and make it better, but you certainly change things. And that was one of the things that you did. Well, before we get into, I do want to briefly talk about The Victims, because I saw you with The Victims, and the sound was quite different to both the first album and the second album now. But tell us a little bit about it's boring being in control and how that came to be, because you're obviously in almost a corner of the world up there, because that, for those people who are listening in the United States and don't know that much about English geography, it's sort of like in a little peninsula south of the Lake District. So it's like north, but it's also west. You know, Isle of Man is out there, and then you've got Ireland off to the side.
Yeah,
what?
It's where we are. It's an island, really, and it's a cul-de-sac town. So yeah, it's sort of an hour of driving. You get there, there's just the sea. Then, so it's but it's responsible for. It's a shipbuilding town, so like submarine.
Huh.
So really, what you get in there is you're getting a lot of, the people that work in the shipyard is the majority of the people that live there, but it's a very working class town. You know? Like, it's a good town, it's a good community, you see, but there's a lot of things there that have obviously inspired me. And I think the first album came from, to be honest, the first album, a lot of it on there is can be seen as a little bit negative. You know what I mean? Because they're all based on true stories. People have asked me about it in the past, and said, well, you know, how can you say that about a person or whatever? And it's like, well, I'm just writing about an experience that happened to me in my life, and I'm not lying about it. I'm not making things up. That's just what happened. Like, sounds like scumbags and stuff.
do you worry that sometimes people from Barrow think that you're sort of saying bad stuff about them, or how do they respond to your music? Do they? Because obviously...
got a really good following there, but yeah, that does worry me. But the people that like me and follow me sort of know what I'm saying, and I'm not saying that, you know, I'm better than you, you're bad and I'm good, and or you're a bit rougher than me or whatever. Because I'm one of them people. I've grown up in that town and experienced them things, but it just at the end of the day, it's not actually making a point or a comment about anybody. It's just talking about everyday life. So whatever experience you're experiencing, you're writing about, whether it's bad or good. And on a couple of occasions, because of the way I might I choose to dress, see, like, I've got this thing, right, where I think it's important to try and look sharp all the time. I don't know why. But I'm quite into sort of like 1940s kind of suits. Mm-hmm. So I'd have like a waistcoat on the trousers, and I like long pointy shoes, but different colours, like I've got a red pair, yellow pair, blue pair, and then I'll match out with my tie and my hanky. I might as well go the full haul and have a top hat on and a cane, you know what I mean, and a little horse, but I don't, but I do. And and some people that are not quite educated in that persuasion might think that they don't really agree with what I look like, see. So then I often would, you know, take a bit of a beating by idiots that thought. That's when I wrote No Future Generation, because what I thought was the most funniest thing about the whole scenario was that I was being followed by this group of people, jumped me, did the old, you know, started giving me a bit of a kicking and that. But when I was down, I remember hearing one of them saying, well, obviously he must be like an heterosexual or something. And I was thinking, well, I don't think you're getting that right, because you think I'm a homosexual, but you're calling me a heterosexual, but you're getting the word wrong. So it was still in my mind, I was thinking, how stupid they were, that they were calling me by something that I was. So that's the line in No Future Generation. And I suppose it did make me think, Christ, you know, like, how stupid are people becoming, and how narrow-minded are people becoming to sort of make assumptions about somebody just by the way they dress like that. And it's only a suit. I didn't have a frock on or anything. Well,
I'm going to throw out the first song. Well, I'm not going to throw it out. I'm not going to throw out any of your songs. But I'm going to let's play that song. Let's play No Future Generation. Yeah. And let the people hear you a little bit. And we'll be back to speak more with John Byrne in just a little bit. Is this your first album? I'm doing air quotes. Is this your first album? It's Boring Being in Control?
Yeah, this was released in 2009.
Okay. And this year in the US. So we'll be able to get it over here as well.
Pretty short.
But this is number 8 off of that album. Once again, the album is called It's Boring Being in Control. We're speaking to John Byrne. If you want to go check out more about him during the song, head over to jonbyrne.co.uk. We'll be right back with more John Byrne. This is No Future Generation.
I took a walk the other day with my eyes fixed on the ground. But I can swear that American innovated slang was all around. Well, I see one approach me in the corner of my eye, saying, wait up, hold up, wait up, you're gonna die. That you ain't too fucking bright. Well, his father deals in muscle gain, cocaine, amphetamine. And his mother had his brother and his sister when she was 13. And he's beating me repeatedly, can't look me in the eye. Secretly looks for me like a burning rage inside. Yeah, you get pissed all day, you never bother with school, you risk it, it's too much, you're addicted to glue. You're the future generation and you hit the fucking prize. We'll be right back.
Once again, that was called No Future Generation by John Byrne. He's still on the line with us. And I should have been recording this entire conversation that we've been having. We've been having lots of good discussions about because you're telling stories that resonate with a lot of people, and especially you talk about in your and some of the stuff that you've written about growing up in the 80s when times were tough, especially in England, times were hard, and especially in a working class town, I would imagine times are really tough. And that happened in 2007 and 8 and 9 when you wrote this first album. And I would imagine that that's one of the reasons that it got such notoriety, is because it was resonating with people. Did you feel that sort of resonation as well on your end?
I think so, yeah. I think a lot of people obviously can relate to it. Like, I find it quite interesting. There's a lot of songs on there that people do comment on, that totally reflect with them in some way about their lives and their past, but because everybody in that town is basically within the same situation.
Yeah.
And going through similar things.
Yeah.
But that album's such a broad thing. I mean, that, you know, you got to think the songs on there are written from 12 to 26. So that's quite a big time. That's all growing up and you know, becoming a man and all that.
Sure.
I suppose. A lot of it was, I think really, it was a strange one for me when we did that, because I'd been to London and I'd just signed to this guy, the new manager and all that, and we went to London and we were supposed to be doing this thing, like this busking thing. And we sort of did a bit, and then one night we had a bit too much to drink and we didn't bother doing it, and then we went to Portobello Road. That's when I met Mick Jones, and he said he liked my suit, and it was, you know, it was the first time I got complimented on that. You know, I thought, oh, this is a town for me, because people actually like me. And so we got talking, and he invited me to play one of his gigs that he was doing some event. I went and he liked it, and then I sort of got involved and then joined a band called Rotten Hill Gang and did a lot of stuff with them. And then I was playing a lot, I was playing a hell of a lot, and all that. All these songs that were on the album were still already written, you know what I mean? But I went through this experience where I was sort of there a year, 2 years, and nearly just totally blown myself out with the lifestyle. Came back from that and I was almost dead. And then we decided to do that album, right? And then we went to Liverpool, or a place called Ellesmere Park, which is near Liverpool. I got a band together, a bass player and a drummer, and we went in and did that. And we did it in a couple of weeks. About Zoe Devlin, who was in Alabama Free, to go and do the vocals and that. But I can't get over the fact that I did that, right? And I thought, it's all right. It's not great, to be honest, but it's all right. And it'll do, because I was surprised I could manage that. And I look back at that and I think, oh my God, because this guy, you know, this somebody was talking about it in America, actually, and they were saying what a great album was, and I was thinking, you have no idea the mess I was in when I did that album. Like, I couldn't even, you know, I wasn't in a great way. And I think what happened there was that worked, and it reflected it, what I was trying to say about things. So I'd gone from living in Barrow to living in London, which to me was a big move, because I'd never even been to London on a school trip. You know what I mean? It was quite a big deal. London, it was like where Mary Poppins goes on and that. you know what I mean? I ended up, my head went a bit, you know, and I did this album a bad time in my life, a bad time because I was, I don't know, I was suffering, I was out of there, you know, I was like, my head had exploded, and I was drinking far too much. And so now I look back at it and I think, wow, that became an album, and people like it. And in my mind, in my head, I think it was just a disaster, do you know what I mean? It was just like, I could hardly even stand up. But it works, like, I think it works, because you can hear that. I think if you listen to that now and you listen back to it, you might think, yeah, it sounds a bit ropey on that one.
Well, I think everything that I've heard of yours does have this sort of raw honesty to it, and you know, more than some of the music I hear, it does have a strange, honest quality to it that I don't know. I can't think of a better word than that. But wasn't a happy time, or was a tough time or a rough time back
it was, yeah. Time. I mean, I remember we were driving to do a video for Cocaine, and I was saying to Mark, the manager, can you please take me to hospital? And he was like, we can't go to hospital because we're doing this video. And I was like, oh, we could just nip in on the way, and you know, they could like sedate me. And then this is when I did have a hell of a drug problem, and I remember sending him, making him go into the co-op at 7:58 in the morning, and he went up to the counter and said, I need a vodka, please. And the woman said, oh, we can't serve you till late. And he went, oh, you're joking. And it was great because it made him he had a drink problem. Oh. And I was just sort of skulking by the cornflakes or whatever. And so I had that, and I got through it. And I don't know if you've seen that video, but oh God, I looked terrible. But it was a shocking time. And what I learned a lot from it, because I thought, you know, let's think about this now, John. I've just gone through that at the same time, done an album and a video for the album.
Which song was the video for?
Cocaine, you know.
Oh, this, right. Yeah.
Which, to be honest, was quite apt.
Yeah,
it sort of worked quite well with the way I was feeling at the time. It was almost like the song's about drugs and destruction, self-destruction, and that's what I was doing, or what was happening. So it sort of worked in a way. It's like people always say, I love that video. I'm like, oh yeah, I look terrible. Yeah, but I thought that was makeup. No, I just look like that. So I think it's when I listen back, sometimes I'll listen to it again and I think, wow, you know, like, there's definitely ups and downs going on there, like,
yeah.
So compared to, you know, you're going to say about the second album compared to that, it's a total different contrast, really.
Well, it was one of the things that I was actually, you mentioned Rodrigo, who we went and saw you in The Victims at the 12 Bar a couple of years ago when he was in town and you were in town. And that sound even is different to the first album and the second, and now the second album. What part did it play from doing the first album and from being in the place that you were, what part did The Victims play in getting into this now second album, which is, it doesn't sound like it's not you, but it does sound different.
Yeah. Well, I think when them two came along,
were they from London?
No, they're from around here.
All right.
Same place where I'm from. We only got them involved for one gig, and then, they were in a punk band, see, and then, so they had that sort of punk feel to them. As a bass and drumming thing. So what happened was we sort of started rehearsing, and you know, things turned a bit more punk, and I suppose a lot of the songs suit being punk anyway, because there's an element, a massive element of punk in there, you know what I mean? So yeah, there was a while that we were doing it did become more rockier and all that. That didn't last. See, what the thing is, I change all the time, so I can't stick with something for too long, which is probably going to be downfall, because I get bored, see. And I just thought, that was good for a while, then I sort of thought it was not working, it's going too far away from I like the simplicity of music. I don't like to sort of overdo it. I don't want to just make loads of noise, because I want it to be about the story, see. You know what I mean? I want people to be able to get involved with the story and really hear it, but I think when you're blasting it out too much, it misses a point, I think. I think you miss something. It's just like, it just becomes a big, loud load of instruments rather than somebody telling a story. So what I did now is that I got a couple of other guys in. One guy plays piano and bass, and then the other guy plays piano, banjo, and the guitars. It's great, you know, they're great musicians. It works a lot better, see. It's a lot, you know, it's... I don't know, I just suppose you can still keep it at that more of a folk route, you know. how you can tell you started.
Well, it's interesting because you tried it and you realized that that's not what you wanted to be doing, and you shifted gears again. And certainly, I mean, in the MP3, you know, 15 seconds of fame culture that we are living in right now, I don't think that there's anything to be ashamed of in doing what you feel is right for yourself at the time. I think that's what makes artists interesting. So I wouldn't shy away. I mean, not that you're asking me for advice, because I'm a radio presenter. I'm not an artist, but Built by Angels is different to not just to the Victim stuff, but also to the stuff that you did on the first album. There's at least one song where it's just completely acoustic, you and an acoustic guitar, and then obviously there's a lot of they're very dynamic, these songs, and they are going back to what it sounds like you're trying to do, is you're trying to tell stories.
Well, I wrote all them songs on my honeymoon. I got married, and then we went to Greece for a week, and I did them all, 13 of them. And up until that point, I wouldn't write in anything because I just wasn't interested. And it was almost like I got that chance to relax, you know, and in a different place, and like that. I started thinking about it more, and got my pad out, and I wrote them all down. And I went from the beginning to the end, and it works out that the first song is called Lighthouse, obviously about my wife, and then the last song is about my wife. So it became like this, like an album about moving on and up in life, you know, progressing. I think it's not, you know, I don't really get beaten up anymore. You know what I mean? I'm not seeing many dead people in wheelchairs and that. It's more life's changed, you know what I mean? It's not as it's a bit normaler. I've got these different things in my life. I've had a daughter, got married, got a family.
Yeah. In a very different place to the first album when you made the second one.
Yeah, I'm almost like concentrating my thoughts on different things. I'm seeing different things. So I suppose there is still a black side to it, because there's songs on there, you know, like, I don't know if you've heard Hollywood Calling, which is about obviously the pressures on people to make it in Hollywood now. There's still that, and then Bitchin' Agreed, that song, and there's still that kind of black humour thing in there. It's not all sort of love song, you know. But, you know, that's just the way it's obviously progressed from that album to that album. It's just a lot that's changed. In my life, really, and how I think and see.
Well, there's one of the songs, it stands out to me, and maybe this is because I sometimes see myself as a failed musician in a way, as a radio presenter now, but Living the Dream, right? Because tell me specifically about that song, because it sounds to me like you're saying, at least the way it speaks to me is that you're saying that this is the dream is changing, or the dream isn't, it's fluid, it's not, I don't know, I don't, what is it about?
I suppose it really is, it's quite blunt. It's just like getting sick of being a musician, because when I wrote that song, I was living in Barrow there, and I had a flat. And the relationship I was in at the time, it got a bit, you know, things got rocky. And she moved out. But I was at my mum's house, and I came home, and she took everything, but she didn't even leave anything. You know what I mean? Not even a spoon. So I was like, right, great. You know what I mean? So I made a little bed out. Some boxes. You know. Anyway, I was busking at the time. That's how I was making my money. So I was going through this thing where, the electric got cut off all the time, because I couldn't pay the blooming electric thing. But Mark used to give me, my manager used to give me money to get the electric, but decided it was much more of a better idea to buy drink and a candle and sit writing songs. So I used to sit there often at night and write me songs, and I wrote Living the Dream because what I was doing was, I was in this freezing cold flat, damp. There was a rat in there, but the rat was all right because eventually, you know, we became sort of quite close and I fed it a bit and it, you know, it became quite tame. It wasn't a problem. But it was freezing. There was no electric half the time. I was in debt. I was going out to try to busk to pay the, but it, I wasn't making enough money anyway. So I was all living the dream. And what happened was one night I sort of drifted off to sleep and I had this really vivid dream that I was Frank Sinatra. And it was amazing. And it, you know what it's like when you have one of them, you have an amazing dream like that and you know, you're this big Hollywood star, you know. And then you wake up in a freezing cold flat with a rat looking at you, nibbling off a peg. Oh. You know what I mean, and your landlord's banging on the window with the curlers in, and it's just grim. It's grim,
yeah.
And but you can write songs, but they're not good enough because the, like you say, we are living in that culture now where it's like a 15-minute fame thing where it's just like it's more about talent shows now, isn't it? Not really talent, just talent shows. Like we can make this person look kind of beautiful and talented, but they're not really, you know. It's just like sing a bit, they haven't got much of a story to tell, see, you know what I mean. And to be honest, I learned a valuable lesson that day, and it was like, well, lying here on my arse busking every day is not going to get me anywhere, so I have to do more to try and further myself. It's very hard to, I think it's a hard industry to work in, but so's probably every industry now, but
yeah.
That's basically where the song came from, because I was just getting sick of living in that situation.
Well, I have to say, I know that the people that listen to this show like your music. I love your music, and I appreciate that you're willing to tell us these stories about your life, and keep doing it, because I think that I would imagine that you do have, like you were saying, you've got a following that will buy every single thing you create. And put a.
That's good. Yeah, yeah. I think I think there's some people in the world that might do that. Which is a good thing. I mean, Mam's one of them. I've got a cousin.
Well, and congratulations on the wedding.
Cheers! Yeah.
But you've got a couple of gigs coming up. You've got one on May 18th at Studio 2 in Liverpool. Going to be. If I could read my handwriting, what is that? I don't even know what that is.
Studio 2 Pastry.
Yeah. What's May 27th? Nolius in 11 in London.
That's in London. Yeah, right. That's down on the South Bank.
Okay. All right. Okay. And then you're playing with John Power in Barrow and Furnace on the 6th of June at the Nines. Yeah. So
that's a big hometown show. Yeah.
How has the hometown been receiving the new album? Have they been eating it up?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean, I've not been there, but I think there's... it's had good response, to be honest, and it's had some really good reviews. It's kind of strange sometimes when you read something about yourself, about what you did or whatever.
Did you try and make it into an album? Or is it more of a collection of songs? Because that's something that people like me discuss a lot. Is the album dead or whatever? And did you create an album, or is it sort of a collection of songs?
I think it's an album, yeah, because it's all very, they were written sort of very close to each other. You know what I mean? So it's almost like a story from start to finish. So yeah, I think it's like an album, really, like the first one. It's a complete, it's almost like a moment in a person's life on a record.
And do you think you'll stick with the sort of sound you've got in the second album, or think you'll go?
No, I've decided I'm going to start getting into hip hop. No, I don't know. This is the thing, Z. I don't know because I change all the time.
Yeah.
This is where it started. This is pretty close to where it started, mm-hmm. when I first started playing music. So it goes round, doesn't it? And I think it will be like this for a while because it kind of works, you know. And I like sort of keeping it quite simple. And, you know, I like folk music, so I probably will stay like this for a while and then see what else happens.
Excellent. Well, it's called Living the Dream. It's out now. You can go to johnbyrne.co.uk and pick it up. We're going to play one more song from it now, but before we do that, I want to say thank you, John, for spending some time with us.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah.
And we'll be keeping an eye on you as you continue on this musical journey.
All right.
I got a bit corny. Apologize. Apologies. But yes, let's play Living the Dream, what we just talked about. You can just imagine John sitting on his empty flat with a candle and a rat, singing this song, screaming the song to the landlady. It's called Living the Dream. The album is called Built by Angels. And this has been John Byrne.
Is much older than I used to know. The wind makes far a buyer receptions. I don't know what's on the TV shows, and the bailiffs took my microwave, so all my meals are cold. So am I, cause they cut my electric, they sent me a letter, so I am told, and the lights go out again. I've been busking all month just to pay the rent in the freezing pouring rain. It wasn't for my imagination, I'd more or less be completely insane. And pop stars today are so pretty, and I just wanna pay the rent. And I'm no bloody David Essex, but the songs I write are almost heaven sent, and the lights go out again. And when I close my eyes, I am Sinatra. I'm playing cards with Sammy Davis Jr., sipping on my cool champagne. Job, but my skills are all in my head. I got no real education. Spent my school days dreaming, lying in my bed. I dreamt I'd be on the TV, playing to all my fans, and each one shouting out my name. I got the whole damn lot in the palm of my hands. Then the lights go out again. When I close my eyes, I am Sinatra. I'm playing cards with Sammy Davis Jr., sipping on my cool champagne. But when I open my eyes, I realize I'm still freezing. I look into the mirror, Sinatra is missing. Looking out the window at the cool rain, and I'm living of a dream.